Welcome to Career Tools. This is Wendy.
And this is Kate.
Today's cast, how to leverage your empty disk style for career growth for the high C's.
The questions this cast answers are, how can a high C adapt their natural style to achieve greater success? What strategies can high C personalities use to overcome their blind spots? And how can high C's break through career plateaus?
If you want the answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Silicon Valley, Palo Alto, Manager Tools is headed your way in just under a month. July 22nd, we host our flagship event, the Effective Manager Conference. July 23rd is our Career Tools Effective Communicator event. Both are open to anyone who would like to register and increase their professional skill set. July 22nd and 23rd in Palo Alto. You can sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
This is the fourth of the series of casts about leveraging your strengths depending on your disk style. And in everyone, we've said that career growth comes from leveraging your strengths and mitigating your weaknesses. And we all have both, but we all also have a wide array of strengths, some of which we like to use more than others. And it can be difficult to work out which ones of those could be applied to career growth most effectively to help you move forward at the pace and in the direction that you want to. And so in this podcast, we're just going to suggest four targeted strategies that will help you use your natural high C tendencies to accelerate your growth.
We're going to cover five topics, though. We'll start with a quick introduction to DISC, optimizing your work for impact, communicating effectively, choosing certifications strategically, and finally, deciding and adapting faster.
So we're going to start with a quick introduction to DISC. If you don't know what DISC is, or a high C or an MT DISC, and you've never heard us talk about any of those, DISC is a behavioral assessment tool that uses two axes to identify a person's preferred style of communication and the way they think about and approach work. The first axis is assertive and reserved. So at one end, you have assertive people, and at the other end, you have reserved people. And the other axis is task-focused people, and at the other end, people-focused people. So if we start with the assertive people, they talk loudly and quickly. They make large gestures, and they walk into a room ready to take on the room and make the environment the way they want it to be. They believe that they can change things just by being who they are. People who are reserved speak more cautiously and slowly and quietly. They make much smaller gestures, usually within the space of their own body, and they don't believe that one person's needs outweigh everybody else's. So if they walk into a room and, for instance, it's too hot for them and there's 50 other people in the room, they won't go change the thermometer because they don't think that their need to be cooler overweighs everybody else's, and apparently everybody else is fine. So our high D's and I's are assertive, and our high S's and C's are reserved.
There's the other axis, as Wendy mentioned, and on this axis, there are people who are focused on the tasks that need to be done. Those people will ask what needs to be done and will mentally check off the list and get a lot of excitement from that. Or just serotonin. I shouldn't say excitement because we're talking about high C's today. That's one end of it. There's people who like to check off the boxes. They think about what needs to get done. On the other end of this axis, there are the people-focused individuals. And those people are more interested in who's here. And they will take time to connect before they begin work. And when we say people-focused, we really mean that they are focused on people. It's just two different ways of going about it. High D's and C's are task-focused. High I's and S's are people-focused. So putting the two axes together, high D's are assertive and task-focused. High I's are assertive and people-focused. High S's are reserved and people-focused. And high C's are reserved and task-focused. And today, we're going to talk about high C's.
We are. So the first piece of guidance we have for you is optimize your work for impact. So the thing about high C's is they have logical, unemotional, data-driven, rational analysis skills. That's how their brain works. They look at a situation and they don't think about who cares about what. They just think about what's the most rational thing to do in this situation. you naturally think about systems and systems effectiveness. And that really works for you a lot of the time. And that's why you rely on it. It's a really good skill. It's a skill you're usually more adept at than others, and you use it well.
Yeah, it's something that upon which high C's rely. And this tendency to rely upon a skill is true of all of the profiles, right? Each profile has a different skill. They have a different strength, and that strength has worked for them in the past. And when you find something that works, you tend to continue to do it, which leads then to it being a common behavior for a person. And for high C's, it's just this ability to see the steps, the process rationally, logically, and very data oriented and in a detailed way. This attention to detail that high C's have ensures excellence in most everything you touch. While others might accept good enough, high C's make sure their work meets the highest standards. All the boxes are checked, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and there is a bow on it at the end. Always well done, always polished, no 80% solution, 110% solution, 150% solution. That's the high C's bread and butter. High C's also have this ability to analyze complex information and identify critical flaws. This prevents problems that other people can't see and could not predict in the system and its outcomes. You're the person who ensures precision and accuracy, really, truly creating quality where others might move on before the work is perfect. Or even some of us might move on before the work's complete.
Mm-hmm.
Isis also boring. Stick it out.
Yeah.
Already moved on. Bye.
Exactly.
Busy.
Yeah, it's amazing. But if you're a self-aware high C, you might notice that sometimes your goal of perfection delays project completion because you need to analyze every detail. And sometimes you focus so intently on following procedures that you miss the opportunities for creative solutions. And sometimes you might find yourself overthinking decisions and just keep on gathering data. I need more data before I can make a decision. When a timely choice made on the available information might better serve your team.
Right. Sometimes high C's don't do a great job of balancing the time something takes with their proclivity for details and finesse and perfection. And we've said it before, we'll say it again. Time is your most valuable resource. You don't have as much time as you probably as you feel you do, but you don't have as much time as you have other things as well. So it means that you struggle, I think, to sometimes move quickly.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So given that you don't have all of the time in the world, but we still want you to use your skills to do things well and with excellence, what we want you to do is use your skills to improve those things which the organization thinks is most important. And sometimes this is confounding because what you think is important is not what the organization thinks is important. Sometimes for you, this particular subsystem needs to be perfect. Otherwise, the rest of it doesn't matter. But the organization is saying, no, we'll have 80% over there because we want 100% over here, and they're making a different choice. So one way to get over this is to think about this as sub-optimizing the subsystem to make the whole system more effective. So sometimes you have to do 80% of what you would think of as an 80% solution rather than 100% solution because the team as a whole can move faster or they can get something done together that you wouldn't be able to do on your own. Sometimes it's not worth putting all of your intellectual horsepower in the place where it's not appreciated.
And we understand that what you appreciate and what other people in the organization appreciate is probably different and is often different. We know, we understand. When you agree to work for an organization, you agree to align with their priorities with your work. And in this case, this is one of those areas where you might have to say, okay, I understand they need my expertise. I get to leverage my skill, not necessarily in the same place I would like to, and I still get to leverage my skill. So just remind yourself, it's not always, again, 80%. You get to do 80% of what you want. So instead of putting your powers for good to in an area where you think is the right answer, let's put it where the organization thinks it's important. So start by optimizing what the organization thinks is important. And then once you have more influence, you can work on what you think will make the difference. Then you get to be the person who decides where we put all those resources. Get promoted twice and you'll get to decide.
Yes, exactly. And we're not picking on high C's because high I's are just as frustrated that they can't spend half their day chatting with everybody and making sure they've heard everybody. They actually have to go do some work and get their projects finished.
Yeah.
The high D's are frustrated that they have to wait for people and listen to other people's opinions. And the high S's are like, I'm not ready to move on. Why do I have to go? So it's not like you're the only one suffering. You're just suffering in a different way to the other styles, I guess.
And I would even suggest that we all remind ourselves a little bit that for most people, they spend at least some of their workday doing something that isn't what they'd like to be doing at that moment. That's just part of how it is. Where Wendy and I are right now, the weather is so beautiful. And I am spending my workday indoors, attached to this computer. I would love to be sitting outside. Now, look, I could totally sit outside a little bit today. That's not a problem. And my point is, at some point during your workday, everybody is working on something when they would prefer to be working on something else. We're not suggesting it's a high C problem, to your point. Everybody has this thing. Oh, I have this special thing I want to do. Okay, cool. Not right now. Yeah.
So, high C's, the thing about you is you know how to optimize your work. And you could optimize it for anything because that's one of your skills. So optimize it for impact to the customer and the organization, and you'll get the most career value out of the work that you're going to do. You have to be there for 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week, whatever it is. So optimize for delivery to the customer and the organization, and you'll get career growth, which is what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. We're going to encourage you to use Pareto's principle, which is do the 20% of the work that leads to 80% of the career advancement. We know there's all kinds of other stuff you could be doing. We're recommending that you focus on the stuff that will benefit your career, even if it's not the stuff you think will solve the most problems.
And we're not talking about the whole week. If you really wanted to, as a high C, you could make that 20% last like 4 hours and the rest of the week have fun.
Yeah. And another thing we really want to encourage you to do is to communicate.
Yes. So there's two problems with high C's communication. First of all, it's a lot of it's happening in their head and they forget to say it out loud. But but also, sometimes the right answer to a question or a situation or the right thing to say is
the
not
right response.
Is not the most correct or the most accurate, but the one that will be accepted by the human beings around you.
Oh my gosh, you have just offended every high C that's listening.
I know. I'm sorry. It's kind of like, you know, those optical illusions where there's two straight lines and they are actually the same length, but they look different because that's kind of you're explaining clear data rationally and the other styles are looking at those two lines and going, yeah, I'm seeing something different. It's not that what you're saying is wrong. It's that they approach it from a different lens.
Yeah. Everyone's hearing what you're saying through their own perception, their own assumptions, their own brain style. And when you're talking about the data, when you're explaining, when you're being logical, it gets convoluted for the other people, not through any fault of yours, but you have to keep in mind that high D's focus on task and high I's and S's focus on people. And so when you're talking to them, they see a different image. Often one really different than what you're saying from the same communication. What they hear is not what you are trying to convey in a lot of cases. And us other profiles really want to benefit from your expertise, your understanding, your rationale. But in order to do that, and we ask this of every profile, you have to learn to see what they do and translate your communication accordingly. We talk all the time about how communication is what the listener does. And that means that the person who is handing over the information, like when you're saying things, you have to be sure that the person who's listening can understand you in a way that you want. Because half the time, what they think they heard and what you meant may be very different. So when you're trying to get a point across, in order to make sure that they heard what you had to say, sometimes you have to change your message. So it would mean emphasizing the high level in the case of high D's, or the people parameters inside of it in the case of high I's or high S's, rather than the details, which we know are really important. And without you, those details would be ignored and the product poorer for it. But you have to allow the other people, the other styles, to concentrate on the aspects that they see as more important.
And that's the whole point of being in a team of all different people. If it was a team of high D's, they'd get nothing done because they'd just fight. If it was a team of high I's, they'd get nothing done because they'd spend all their day in Starbucks. If it was a team of high S's, they'd get nothing done because they'd be asking each other all day how they are. If it's a team of high C's, you're just going through the details and the data all the time and you never get anything done. That's an exaggeration and a stereotype of people. Yeah. Like, I'm putting them in small boxes, but it's true. If you have teams with all of one style, it's much less effective than having teams of multiple styles who can actually communicate with each other.
Right.
So they bring something that you don't have. You bring something they don't have, but learning to communicate that is what's important.
Mm-hmm. When we think about the assessment overall, right, the benefit of an MT disc for a high C is that it provides a method for communicating with others effectively. You don't have to intuit or understand innately how to communicate with the other styles. You just have to follow the instructions we give you and convert what you would say to the language that makes the most sense to them. And again, we ask this of every profile. We're asking everybody to adapt the way they communicate to the others around them. We're not just asking this of high C's, because I don't want our high C's to think, oh my gosh, they're picking on me and I have to change what I say and the other people aren't doing it. You're right. Not everybody's doing this, but the people who are getting their message across so much more clearly. And this will help people understand, to some extent, how important the work you're doing is. Because it's not that what you're doing isn't important. It's that when you communicate it to them, they can't see the value because the way they see value is different from you. So when we're suggesting to you, hey, use their language, keep in mind that the only challenge is really overriding your own tendency and habit to communicate in ways that make sense to you.
Yes. If you can speak French or German or Swahili, you can speak high D.
And this is the perfect analogy, because if you're talking to someone and they speak Spanish and you speak English and Spanish, you wouldn't use English with them.
No, exactly. Even if your Spanish isn't good, you'd at least like try and use some of the words and then gesture for the others.
Yeah. Using the other person's language increases the likelihood that they'll understand you. It's that stinking simple. But people don't always know that DISC is sort of like different languages, more like different dialects, because we're all using a similar language.
We're all speaking human to some extent. And if you don't know, if you've got this far and you didn't know you were a high C, you've probably realized you are or you aren't, because we're driving you nuts, or it's all making perfect sense. If you are on the Manager Tools website, on the top navigation, you look for MT Disc, you can take the profile. It will take 20 minutes. You'll have both a confirmation that you are a high C, and I think there's 40 pages of it, of this is how to communicate with the other styles. You literally just have to follow the instructions.
Join us on our executive speaker series call July 17th as Thomas Cox, the president and owner of Becoming a Best Boss Training and Coaching, teaches us how to unlock the power of teamwork with the Accountability Protocol. Discover tools that enhance clarity, trust, and performance. Learn how to improve your performance, reputation, and problem-solving skills. All of our Executive Tools licensees are invited. Become a licensee today to receive your invitation. Visit us online at manager-tools.com/memberships.
So next we're going to talk about certifications, which are a high C's favorite thing.
Ooh, yeah. So a high C focuses on facts, and their tendency to do this and focus on requirements and metrics means that they value certification, especially for the kind of technical knowledge that high C's tend to have that's not easily measured. However, other styles, in part because we don't have the same focus and partially because we tend to be less technical, don't value certifications in the same way. I am not certain I hold any certifications. It never occurred to me to get them.
I'm a certified travel agent, but I've never used it.
Right.
I only did it so that I could pass the exam.
Yeah.
Which is a high C's, like, why would you do that? Well, you just would.
Well, also, I think it just brings to the forefront the fact of how different the profiles can be. I am certain there are all kinds of certifications out there. Never occurred to me to get one.
Yeah. If we think about it from if we just come out of this
your
for
career.
And we think about hiring managers hiring you for your next role, whether that's an internal role or an external role, there's a balance for them between someone with a certification and no experience and someone with no certification but practical experience. For some roles and some certifications, the choice is clear cut, right? If I'm going to have surgery, I want someone who is an actual doctor and has passed surgery school and has a certification to
surgery school. That's not a school.
It's not a school.
Keep going.
I assume that's where the surgeons went. But, you know, I want to go into their office and then have one of those nice, big, fancy plaques on the wall, because it is important that a doctor is actually qualified to operate on you. In other cases, I'm going to offend every project manager out there now, like project management, the certification isn't that important.
Okay, that's not offensive. You're not suggesting project manager certifications aren't valuable. You're suggesting they mean less when you're trying to get surgery. You're just comparing the two.
No, I was going a little further than that. There are plenty of really, really good project managers who have spent their whole career delivering on time, on budget, and in scope, and have never done a PMI course in their life.
And you're saying they don't let you practice surgery if you don't have a certification.
Exactly. Equally, there are some people who have done the PMI course and have never delivered a project on time, on budget, and in scope, or have delivered a project at all. So sometimes what happens is the high C's, because they like metrics and they like to be able to say, I've got this stamp, they do the certification, but they don't realize that it doesn't have the value to either other styles or in certain situations that they think it does. So they'll come to you with their PMI certification, for example, and you say, yeah, but that's no good to me because you've never delivered a project. I don't actually care that you've done the course. And that hurts their feelings because they worked really hard on the course and they got the certification. But in certain circumstances, it's less valuable than you think it is.
Yeah.
So if you have a choice about what certification that you want to work on, choose based on industry recognition if you're going for career growth. So choose the ones like surgery school, where it's a requirement or it's a really valuable just to have the certification, and that shows that you can actually do something. You don't need the experience as well. If you just want to take a course for fun, have at it. Do anything you like. But just if you are going to take a course that has a certificate at the end of it and you're doing it for the certificate, just be careful that that's not necessarily the value to your career that you think it is, and just like weigh that up before you start and probably spend a whole bunch of money.
And time.
Exactly.
And that's a perfect segue, because the next thing we want to talk about is decisions. We want to recommend that you decide and adapt a little more quickly than you normally would. High C's analytical skills can cause decisions to be made too slowly for the speed of the rest of the organization. High C's can easily see where data is lacking and that, of course, there are risks in places that other people can't see. They don't identify that. However, there's a different way of looking at the situation, which is the faster you adapt to any situation that requires a decision, the more control you keep. And that's really crucial. And the decision paralysis that is part of constantly looking for the perfect answer can cause us to lose traction and time, which is specifically, obviously, the biggest one, but can also make it harder for us to make better choices along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it limits our ability to make choices throughout the rest of the project as well.
Yeah. So if you look back over your career so far, you can probably see many, many times where waiting for more data would have given a better outcome. However, you can probably also see other times when waiting for more data gave a worse outcome, or where additional data, when it came, didn't make a difference to the choice you made. Or sometimes the data that came later made you think, oh, I should have done that differently. But in the meantime, we've adapted, we've moved on, like it actually now doesn't have the relevance that it did. So there was still a successful outcome, even though waiting would have given you a different way to get to the same thing. So if the organization needs a decision made, or the data that you need to make a decision, or the data that you need to make a decision for your comfort level isn't available, just go back over your career in your own head. Think about those outcomes and make the call with the data you have when the organization needs you to make the call. Because you know there's all sorts of outcomes that you have experience of where more data didn't help, or more data didn't make a difference, or more data didn't make a difference because you'd already acted in a different way. Like, more data doesn't always make the perfect decision. What makes the perfect decision is making the decision when the decision needs to be made.
Yeah, don't let your instinct and your natural tendency override what your experience tells you to be true, which is there is no perfect decision, and perfect decisions don't come from more data every time.
And you are the skilled professional. You're the one who can adjust, adapt, and fix problems. I know you can. So trust that part of you, not more data.
Yeah. Perfect really is the enemy of the good. Not every action needs deep analysis. Not every risk is worth waiting for perfect information. Experimentation and feedback are part of the way that you advance as an individual, and that teams and organizations advance as well. As you go forward, this ability will provide you with a treasure trove of evidence-based insights that you can intuit from, rather than relying solely on feelings. You can, again, go back, think about what you've been through, remind yourself of the outcomes post-decision at different levels of information. You don't have to depend on hunches or guesswork. You'll have concrete data points showing where your comfort level would actually or should actually be versus where the risks truly lie. This then will allow you to have a systemic approach that can help change your uncertainty into a structured framework that utilizes your analytical strengths and also lets you move more quickly in fast-paced environments, contributing super valuable perspective and keeping pace with organizational demands, which we know sometimes is both difficult for and stressful too, high C's.
And yet a high C's analytical smarts and the ability to keep up with an organization is like gold. Like if you could do those two things, that's your career just made. Like, just
right.
Like
analytics and speed.
Probably relationships. But
yeah, humans. It turns out you do have to work with humans.
You do have to work with humans, unfortunately.
All jobs have humans.
Yeah. But still, the ability to transform that uncertainty into the ability to make good decisions at the speed the organization needs you to, is that would be gold. So high C's want things to be correct and accurate and perfect. And all of those are desirable attributes which create immense value for organizations, which is why organizations have huge rafts of high C's working for them. And applying your strengths strategically rather than pedantically you magnify your impact and you get the recognition that your work deserves. Instead of people saying, he just slows me down, I'm still waiting for him to make a decision. Oh, my, why? As a high D, that's all I have. Why? The most successful high Cs don't abandon their analytical approach. They apply it more broadly to include their career strategy as well as technical problems. And by recognizing that organizations are human systems that respond to different inputs, not just technical systems, you can maintain and use your analytical integrity and work with the people that are necessary for your career growth. Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thanks, everyone. That's all for this week. Join us next week as we cover a new topic. Bye, everyone.